It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As a new generation of obesity medications emerges, we learn about injections to help people who are struggling with diabetes and chronic weight issues. You can be part of this discussion on weight loss drugs and health. Call in with a question. Share comments at any point, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Don Belt-Davis is a UW Health endocrinologist and professor of medicine in the Division of Endocrinology, Diabetes, and Metabolism at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Davis, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
There is the stigma about obesity, and I think we should talk about it first. How much do physicians understand what causes obesity?
Well, I think, you know, we understand that there are many, many factors that go into the cause of obesity. But I think maybe the most important message to send is that it's not necessarily something that's always personal responsibility, which I think is a common misconception of the public that, you know, everyone with obesity is, you know, has personal responsibility. In other words, they made poor choices. What we know about obesity biologically is that it can be, people can be predisposed to obesity based on events in their early life, even things that happened in utero before they were even born, exposures to various environmental impacts, as well as, you know, societal infrastructure, which makes it difficult for a lot of people to have access to healthy food and activity.
How does obesity then become life-threatening?
Well, obesity is, in and of itself, is, you know, may seem to be mostly a cosmetic issue, but in reality, individuals with obesity have a lot of underlying metabolic changes and are also have a lot of inflammatory processes going on in their body. And so we know that many people with obesity are at greatly increased risk of other diseases like diabetes, cardiovascular disease, or heart attacks, strokes, and even certain types of cancers as well.
Our state's health agency says about 2 in every 3 adults in the state are affected by excess weight. The CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, reports the national obesity rate has increased about 10 percentage points over the past 2 decades. Why is obesity becoming more common in this country?
Well, that's a really great question. Again, I think we have a lot of potential answers, but I'm not sure that there's just one easy answer to that question. You know, we think that increasing rates of obesity have a lot to do with, again, as I was mentioning, some societal changes that have happened. You know, people have more access to kind of low nutritional quality but high calorie foods. There's probably less access to activity in people's general day. People spend a lot more of their working day nowadays sitting in front of a computer rather than doing any sort of physical work. So a lot of factors have really gone into this. As I mentioned, a lot of these are societal more than individual factors. And it's a huge problem, as you mentioned. You know, this overweight and obesity affects almost 2/3 of our population. So I think as we talk about the impact that will have in the future on our overall health, but also kind of our societal impact on the cost of medical care in this world, in the country in particular, it's really going to be something that we're really struggling with. So, you know, we kind of refer to obesity as, you know, a really important public health issue that is going to have a huge impact across the next several decades.
Dr. Don Belt-Davis with us, UW Health endocrinologist and UW Madison professor of medicine, as we explore new treatments for obesity. You can join in with your questions and comments at any point, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Davis, how are the treatment options for obesity changing?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of kind of new and interest, I guess, in obesity treatment and a lot of, I guess, media attention and sort of public awareness of some newer medication therapies for obesity. and I'm sure we'll get into the details on those. But we have had, you know, various treatments for obesity for, you know, many years. We have used medications for the treatment of obesity, and we've also used bariatric surgery, which can be a very effective way to treat obesity as well. But this newer class of medications that we'll most likely talk about today are injectables. These include a medication called semaglutide, which is marketed as Ozempic for the treatment of diabetes, and then is marketed as Wegovy for the treatment of obesity. And then there are other drugs in that same class that are also works in a similar way. And I think these have received a lot of attention because they're a bit newer. They are more effective than some of the older medications we had for obesity management, and they've just been popular on social media and other things that has really gained them a lot of attention.
Physicians as well, scientists calling it, you know, game changers, a transformational time in the conversation around Ozempic and Wegovy. How miraculous are these drugs?
Well, I think I would not call them miraculous. I think that, you know, is a bit of an overstatement. And I think that's a little bit where a lot of the public misconception can sometimes come in. So these medications in the treatment of obesity specifically, not in patients who also have diabetes, but specifically for the treatment of obesity, these medications can, they can promote a meaningful amount of weight loss. And by meaningful, I'm kind of focusing on clinically meaningful. So on average, you know, patients might lose somewhere in the range of, 10 to 30 pounds of weight on these medications, which is good. And that often can lead to significant improvement in their overall metabolic health, maybe lower their risk of diabetes or improve their diabetes. But it also isn't a miracle drug. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is not the medication that's going to allow someone to lose 100 pounds, 150 pounds, and completely kind of transform their life. But it can be a very helpful tool. So I think it's just important to kind of understand the capacity. There's also variable responses. Some people seem to respond very well to these medications and maybe lose more than 30 pounds, but others don't have a really strong response and maybe they only lose a smaller amount of weight.
Okay, so we got the clinical meaningful weight loss there, but what is the pharmacological aspect of this? How do these drugs work in the body?
Sure. So the drugs we're talking about here, which again, the one that most people have heard of is semaglutide, which is known as Ozempic or Wegovy, but there are drugs in this class, including something called Victoza, Trulicity, Saxenda. These are all in the same class. And what they do is they are essentially designed to mimic a hormone that our body makes normally. This hormone is called GLP-1. And GLP-1 is a hormone that we normally make every time we eat. It's secreted from endocrine cells in the gut in response to food. And it sort of signals to your body, hey, I just ate something. Get ready to process all these nutrients coming in and get ready to stop eating because you just ate and you don't need to eat anymore. So it sends signals to the brain that you're to help you feel full and to reduce appetite. It sends signals to the nerves that control the stomach to kind of delay the emptying of the stomach and help you feel full a little bit longer. And it also sends signals to parts of the body that help you process those nutrients, like the beta cells in the pancreas that secrete insulin and helps you secrete more insulin and move that blood sugar down. And that's why it also works for diabetes as well.
And
go ahead.
And these are working through injections. Is that right?
Correct. Because it's a hormone, a peptide hormone, it's not something that can be taken orally in general. However, there is an oral version of semaglutide available now. The brand name there is Rybelsus. That's been around for a few years now. I think it was approved in about 2019. And that does work through the same pathways, and it can be taken as a pill.
Dr. Don Belt Davis, endocrinologist, directs the UW-Madison Comprehensive Diabetes Center as we explore the changing treatment landscape for weight loss drugs. Call in with a question, share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore how obesity treatments could change with medications that are associated with diabetes management and ones that are currently being investigated as potential anti-obesity drugs. You can join in the conversation about achieving and maintaining weight loss. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Don Belt Davis is a UW health endocrinologist, directs the UW-Madison Comprehensive Diabetes Center. Let's take a call now. Lori is joining us from Milwaukee. Lori, hi, go ahead. What is your story?
Hi, good morning. I pretty much have been an advocate for these weight loss drugs by experience. I'm above 60, tried for about 2 years, everything, intermittent fasting, smoothies, you name it. I tried for 2 years, so I'm postmenopausal, and I just kept chunking on the weight, 2 to 4 pounds a month at some points. So I finally convinced my doctor and went through all the paces, went on Ozempic, had a fine experience, titrated correctly per my doctor. She's awesome. Then insurance switched me to Wegovy. That went well. Then I stopped working and didn't have insurance, so then I flew solo. Now I'm going to ask for another alternative that I can afford. I just want to be an advocate for people who would like to try it, because we're hearing so many terrible things, and I got such attitude from relatives, coworkers, everyone, when it was so politically incorrect to use it. It truly saved my body and my brain. I now swim, I walk, I can move better, I can exercise what I need to exercise. Knees and hips are improved, but not amazing. So I'm calling to encourage people to check with their doctor, go through the paces, don't hear the 1% terrible. And then ask you, what's the next most affordable step you could consider for my continued weight management?
Lori, thank you so much for sharing your story. Dr. Davis.
Hi. Yeah, thank you so much for calling in, Lori. And I think, you know, your experience is what we hear quite commonly. Like I was saying earlier, these drugs can be quite effective at helping patients, you know, lose weight when they've, you know, struggled and failed. And a lot of the older medications and therapies we had for weight loss just were not as effective. But you bring up a really good point, which is that unfortunately, what we suspect and what we know probably is that these medications, once you discontinue them, then often people likely will regain weight off of these medications. And they are also very expensive, as you point out. And some patients don't have insurance coverage options for these. Even if they have insurance, some companies don't cover these medications for obesity. And if you lose insurance, obviously, then it can be completely unaffordable. So, you know, to kind of get at your question of what next. So when these medications are not available for whatever reason, cost, or there's also been a lot of supply chain issues and drug shortages with these medications, what do we do? And really, we don't have good answers there. I think there are not necessarily any other, affordable ways to get these medications. There have been reports of a lot of people obtaining semaglutide from compounding pharmacies, for example, which I do not recommend. Those are not FDA regulated and are not, in fact, as far as I know, they're not legal. They're not allowed to make that medication off patent. So I would discourage people from doing that, buying a kind of compounded version of this that's not the formally approved version.
Do the drug companies themselves have particular programs for people who do not have coverage, some type of application program that could help with assistance?
Sometimes they do, but for the most part, the answer is no there. For the vast majority of patients, they they may be able to get a month or two supply, for example, like from a co-payment card or something like that. But eventually that will run out. Like there's no way to continue on these drugs somewhat indefinitely without being able to cover them with insurance or payment.
Laura in Green Bay called saying that they are diabetic, was prescribed Ozempic, worked well, Laura says, but now can't find the drug for diabetes, but their friend can buy it for weight loss. And Laura's wondering if they would have better luck getting it for weight loss as well.
Yeah, so this is exactly kind of what I was getting at. There's been a lot of shortages and a lot of supply chain issues. So, you know, these drugs have really exploded in popularity over the last, you know, couple years. And, you know, unfortunately, the companies just haven't been able to keep up with the demand. And so this is happening to a lot of my patients as well with diabetes, that they are not able to get some of these medications. Sometimes there's an option to switch to one of the other medications in the same class. For example, Ozempic might be unavailable, but Trulicity might be available, or one of the other options. And so that's an important thing to ask your doctor and your pharmacist about. The weight loss version of semaglutide, which is Wegovy, also sometimes has been available when the diabetes version, Ozempic, is not. And so that's another way some patients have been able to obtain supply, is by getting it under the weight loss branded application. But again, it gets tricky with insurance, because insurance companies may not cover it for obesity therapy, but only cover it for diabetes, for example. So it can be very hard. And it's a lot of paperwork and phone calls and tracking down supply for patients and for the providers who are trying to prescribe these medications.
Dr. Don Bell Davis directs the UW-Madison Comprehensive Diabetes Center. We're at the intersection of diabetes and weight loss and new medications coming to market. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Dr. Davis, are there some common side effects with Ozempic or Wegovy?
Yeah, the most common side effect, which is quite common, happens probably to 30 to 40% of patients taking these medications, is nausea. And that happens most commonly right at the onset of treatment. It often gets better, but not for everyone. And then some patients also along with that will have more severe GI upset, like vomiting, diarrhea, even constipation. And that's really the major side effect. There has been some, you know, again, talk about these more rare side effects, things like trouble with emptying of the stomach causing problems, or other kind of rare side effects. And I think, as the previous caller mentioned, you know, those are uncommon and rare. And so, you know, that's not the major thing. What we really worry about is just patients not being able to tolerate these medications because they have so much nausea.
In recent decades, though, weight loss drugs, some weight loss drugs have turned out to be dangerous. Drugs with amphetamines were addictive, others damaged heart valves. Are there reasons to be wary of the new weight loss drugs coming to market?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And you're right. And some of the older drugs, like, were based off of amphetamines, and some of the still approved drugs that we have for weight loss outside of this class can still have some side effects. They're much safer than the older versions. I think, you know, it's a great question, and time will tell to some regard in terms of whether there's any like longer term side effects, but these drugs aren't that new. We've had drugs in this class dating back for over 15 years now. So we've been using them for a long time for diabetes therapy. And they've been studied in very large clinical trials for many years. And we haven't seen a lot of short-term, again, like, you know, side effects. But long-term effects, there is some concern about potentially increasing the risk of things like pancreatic cancer, increasing the risk of pancreatitis, which is an inflammation of the pancreas, and potentially some other things. But for the most part, we don't have any strong evidence to support that in the trials that have been done so far. And again, we'll have to just follow patients on these medications for longer periods of time to ensure there's no real signal there.
Longer periods of time, about how long would a patient stay on Ozempic or Wegovy for treatment of obesity?
Right. So that's really kind of coming back to our first caller's issue. You know, the right answer to that is essentially as long as they want to maintain that weight loss. So, which could be forever, right? Mm. So we're talking about a medication that a patient would potentially need to continue taking somewhat indefinitely. And as long as they want to maintain that weight loss, weight regain can certainly happen with discontinuation of these medications. And so this isn't something that we recommend using for, you know, short-term use to help lose a little bit of weight and then just go ahead and stop it. Now, again, there's variability. Some people are able to make lifestyle changes and other modifications and they can maintain the weight loss. But
and we have to pause right there. UW Health endocrinologist Don Belt Davis, our guide. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Newly approved weight loss medications are aimed at people struggling with obesity. We learn how this newer class of drugs used to treat diabetes is gaining attention for impressive weight loss results. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Don Belt Davis is a UW Health endocrinologist and professor of medicine in the Division of Endocrinology, Diabetes, and Metabolism at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Davis, we heard from Val in Bayview, called in wondering to what degree these weight loss medications act as placebos. Do they initially motivate a person to lose weight through diet and exercise? And if so, do the drugs become less necessary so the dosages could be reduced and eventually eliminated over time? Dr. Davis, are you there?
Oh, I apologize.
That's
okay. Mute myself.
Sure, sure.
That's a great question. There certainly are some placebo effects that we see in, weight loss clinical trials. However, these drugs were all studied compared to a placebo group. So in other words, we know that they promote more weight loss even than what the small amount we would see from that placebo effect. And the placebo effect is essentially just, a patient kind of paying more attention and being aware of their, their weight as part of a trial and maybe losing a little bit of weight on their own. So the answer is yes, there are some patients who probably are able to use this opportunity to lose some weight with medication, change their lifestyle, be more active now because they've lost that weight and they're feeling better and they're healthier. And they can perhaps maintain that weight loss off of medication. But when we kind of look at averages across the board, that's not going to likely be the case. The case is most likely patients will have rebound weight gain. And that happens with almost every weight loss medication we have, that patients unfortunately tend to have rebound weight gain. The body sort of has this tricky way of resetting itself, and it unfortunately likes to kind of bring its weight back up to where it was. So it will actually change metabolism and things when you lose weight, and can sort of promote that weight regain in ways that are not so beneficial for the management of obesity.
If a person is prescribed one of the new weight loss therapies, are other therapies or nutritional guidance recommended alongside them?
Yeah, we always recommend, working on what we generically refer to as lifestyle modification, trying to follow a overall lower calorie diet and, get more activity in your day. Those are two things that we know can help promote both not so much weight loss, but also just overall health. So we do recommend those. But in terms of following a very specific diet, people talk about intermittent fasting and ketogenic diets and all those things. Those can be effective for weight loss, but we don't necessarily recommend those for patients taking these medications at the same time. But there's nothing wrong with continuing on a diet plan while you use these medications.
Heard from Samantha in Whitehall, who called in to say they're 42 years old, they're 5 feet tall, 180 pounds, and Samantha wants to know what they can do to eliminate the food cravings when they're not actually hungry.
Right. So, appetite suppression is one of the mechanisms that these drugs that we're talking about work through, but there are other medications, as I mentioned, as well. We use medications called phentermine and topiramate that can work pretty well as appetite suppressants and can also help promote weight loss in that way. And those can sometimes be a little more affordable than these newer injectable medications, but they also can have some other side effects as well. So suppressing appetite for some people is really critical to help them with that weight loss journey.
And it may be hard to understand or relate to what it's like not to feel full, not to recognize when the body doesn't need more nutrients. How can you describe that complication for someone who can't relate?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, sort of the things that drive people to eat are complicated. You know, for some patients, it's a very strong hunger feeling that they can have, which is disproportionate to the actual reality of when they've last eaten. And that is all regulated in the brain. Their brain secretes different hormones and, you know, neural outputs that make you feel hungry. And that can be very dysregulated in the setting of obesity. But on the other side, some people also have, you know, dysregulated eating for other reasons. They may not necessarily feel hungry, but it's a way that they manage stress, the way that they kind of cope with difficult times during their day. It may be a way that they manage anxiety. And so it can be complicated in that way. And then there's also a lot of disordered eating, things like binge eating and other eating disorders that can play into all these challenges that patients have with weight gain and weight loss.
We're talking about advancements in weight loss treatments. Dr. Don Belt Davis, UW Health endocrinologist and UW-Madison professor of medicine. You can join in questions and comments at any point, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Marty in Lake Geneva with a question. Hi, Marty.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I heard that these diabetic drugs have been around for 15 years. I'm going to show my ignorance here. People that have diabetes, do they have to take these drugs for the rest of their life? Much like, you know, people who want to keep the weight off? And I'll listen to the response off air.
Marty, thank you so much. Dr. Davis.
Yeah, that's a great question. And the answer is basically yes. I mean, we have a lot of different medication options for the management of type 2 diabetes. So, you know, using a medication in this class is just one of the options. A patient may continue with a medication in this class, or for whatever reason, they may switch to a different medication. But yes, diabetes is a chronic disease. And so when a patient's diagnosed, they're going to need to continue to stay on some medical therapy for their diabetes typically. If they are able to lose a significant amount of weight, though, that's what we were getting at earlier, like metabolically significant weight loss. Some patients early in their diagnosis of diabetes are potentially able to, quote unquote, reverse their diabetes through significant weight loss, which could include using one of these medications. So it's possible, but again, then if they regain weight, they have to closely monitor for that return of their diabetes.
At what point should someone consider bariatric surgery?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up because I think bariatric surgery also remains a really important component of our strategy for managing both diabetes and obesity, actually. Bariatric surgery can be highly effective at weight loss, and it promotes sustained weight loss. So this is an example where you can have the surgery and then the weight loss continues even beyond the surgery without ongoing treatment. Bariatric surgery is very helpful for diabetes. It can actually even reverse diabetes in some cases. So what bariatric surgery is recommended for people who have significant obesity, we typically would say a BMI at least greater than 35 and often with at least one other obesity-related disease like diabetes, hypertension, and again, it can be very effective, but it needs to be done in the right patient, and it is, you know, obviously a more invasive thing, although they have more and more advances in bariatric surgery also to make that a less invasive surgery with less long-term complications and side effects as well.
Can you walk us through what happens in bariatric surgery?
Sure. So there's a few different forms of bariatric surgery. Currently, one of the most commonly performed ones now is called the sleeve gastrectomy, which is basically removing about two-thirds of the stomach. And by reducing the amount of volume, basically, for the stomach, there are some effects on just the patient feeling full more quickly. But interestingly, bariatric surgery seems to have a lot more effects than just the basic, how much food can you eat at once. And it changes lots of different pathways in the body. It changes the hormones that are secreted after you eat. It changes the way that the gut processes food. And all of those changes are really critical for why bariatric surgery works. One of the hormones it changes is actually GLP-1, which is the hormone that these medications are designed to mimic. So basically, these medications are mimicking one of the pathways that is effective for bariatric surgery.
So it has a more wider effect on the body's systems and how it mm-hmm. processes nutrients.
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How effective is bariatric surgery in helping maintain a healthy weight? What has the research shown over the decades?
Yeah, so bariatric surgery can be quite effective in terms of weight loss overall. This is an example where patients actually can occasionally lose up to 100 pounds or more with bariatric surgery. And what we also know is that weight loss, as I mentioned earlier, is sustained. So there's been studies looking at patients who've had bariatric surgery 10, 15 years ago and their weight loss. Although they may regain a little bit of weight, they still maintain a weight that is significantly below their baseline before surgery. So it's both more effective, I would say, than the current medications we have, and it's also sustainable over the long term, which is very different than what we think is going to be the case. Now, we don't have 10 to 15-year data on patients who've lost weight with these drugs and then stopped them, but we predict that that most likely is not going to be as favorable.
And you said that the surgery is less invasive now. In what way? What have the advancements been like?
So the current one I just mentioned, sleeve gastrectomy, is removing part of the stomach, and that can be done laparoscopically. And previously, the more common one was called Roux-en-Y gastric bypass surgery, which involved more changes. The parts of the small intestine were removed and rerouted, and there was a little bit higher complication rate with that, and it was a little more invasive. And some of the older versions of bariatric surgery were even more invasive and more prone to malabsorption and other chronic nutritional problems as well. So there have been a lot of advances, and there's even some newer procedures that are under investigation now that are even less invasive, mm-hmm. potentially even just going in endoscopically, like to put in things through the mouth into the GI tract.
Dr. Don Belt-Davis, UW Health Endocrinologist, Director of the UW-Madison Comprehensive Diabetes Center, as we explore new weight loss therapies. Be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss an emerging class of medications that could help with weight loss in people who live with obesity and potentially treat other medical issues. UW Health endocrinologist Don Belt-Davis takes your questions about prescription injections associated with weight loss and diabetes management. Call in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Davis, physicians and researchers have found that drugs like Ozempic might also be useful in treating addictions like compulsive shopping, smoking, and alcoholism. What potential do you see for these drugs to be used in treating other addictions?
Yeah, there's some interesting research coming out in that space, and there's, also been some ongoing work looking at the potential role of these medications and other disorders associated with the brain. So I think, you know, it's a little early to say, but I agree there is some interesting early data. These importantly, I would say these drugs are not FDA approved for that use, and there hasn't been enough studies to formally kind of definitively say that it's going to be effective there. But I think it's something that we will definitely be watching over time, and there may be an even more expanded use of these medications. The one thing that we didn't really bring up is that these medications also do have other benefits in terms of reducing cardiovascular risk and also some improvements in overall kidney function for our patients with diabetes. So those potential benefits, again, may be there for the patient using this simply for obesity management as well.
Donna in Madison called in wondering why it is that when you reduce the amount of food you eat, your weight loss can stagnate and you don't lose the weight.
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, it is the reality. And I think this is why it can be really frustrating to try to lose weight. And it's also really frustrating, I think, to convey to certain people that, you know, it's not all about just willpower. As I mentioned earlier, you know, what we know happens with obesity is that there's kind of a reset and rewiring of a lot of the metabolic pathways in the body that really make it hard to lose weight. And when you do lose weight, if you reduce calorie intake, sometimes what the body does is it starts saying, oh my gosh, I'm not getting enough calories. So now I'm going to reset everything and I'm going to hold on to those calories even more.
Conserve. Yeah.
Exactly. And so it just sort of creates this vicious cycle where it's really, really challenging to, you know, lose weight. And that's really what I'm getting at. Like, obesity is really, it's a disease process, and it's a change in the way your body's responding to nutrients and your environment, and it really makes it difficult. It's not just a matter of, like, willpower to combat this problem.
And, you know, patients might say, look, I've tried everything that I can do to achieve a healthy lifestyle and reach that ideal healthy weight, and just nothing is working for me. I'm wondering how those conversations go as that patient has that situation where they have tried, you know, willpower and other things in their life to be able to take off the weight. What are your responses like?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's important to you know, reassure and validate people in that who are having those experiences, because as I mentioned, you know, and I think people have a lot of, you know, shame and blame and guilt and other feelings associated with obesity and weight loss. And it can be really challenging to kind of work through all of that and, you know, help them have a healthier lifestyle. I think, you know, as a society too, we often equate body weight with lots of things. And, you know, it's important to remember that for some people, maybe losing weight isn't as important as they might think. You know, if patients are only 10 to 15 pounds overweight and otherwise healthy and don't have any, you know, metabolic consequences of that extra weight, then, you know, maybe the better thing for them for their mental health is to essentially stay where they are. And I think we have this, you know, societal push that everyone needs to be at sort of this perfect body weight, which is really not possible and not sustainable for a lot of people.
There has been buildup and I hate to use the word hype, but maybe it is that word about these new emerging weight loss medications. Is there a strategy you use when talking with patients about, you know, what is practical and what is, you know, realistic for weight loss management, especially patients who have been reading up on these new medications and seem really eager to try?
Right. And I think, you know, again, it for me as a physician, what I'm really looking at is, you know, what are the overall health consequences of this excess weight? If a patient is having a lot of, you know, implications on their health related to the excess weight, they have early prediabetes, they have high blood pressure, they're having a lot of arthritis due to that excess weight. Those things, I think, are things that drive me to say, okay, there's a really strong medical need for us to help you with promoting weight loss, and I think we should move forward with this. But I think it's important to just remind everyone that, you know, there are always side effects with every medication we use. There's cost both to the individual and to society with every medication we use. And so I think we do have to think about this in terms of which patients are going to get the most benefit and make sure that it's kind of being used for patients with the most need, essentially, so that we aren't kind of bankrupting the system, I guess, by putting 66% of the population on these very expensive medications.
What other weight loss drugs are being developed that could be effective for treating obesity? What could be coming down the pipeline?
Yeah, so there's a new medication that was approved about a year ago for diabetes. The brand name there is Mounjaro. It's also the generic is tirzepatide. And there's pretty positive data on that medication for weight loss as well. And we expect it will be approved for weight loss alone in the very near future. And that drug seems to be even more powerful and potent than the ones we're talking about now. It works by targeting not just GLP-1, but also mimics another gut hormone called GIP and targets both of those receptors. And so it's kind of even has like double potency. And so we're kind of excited about that one. That's the one that some people are referring to as kind of game changing because the weight loss we get there at the maximum doses is getting close to what we can achieve with bariatric surgery.
Generics in this industry, in this area, is there any generic medicine?
So at this point, there is not. And as I mentioned, there are some compounding pharmacies selling these medications, which is not essentially legal. Mm-hmm. And even if some of these medications will be coming off patent or maybe already are off patent, but unfortunately, even with generics, sometimes that doesn't necessarily reduce the overall price because pricing is a complicated thing and it's tied to demand and all these other things. So the pricing may not come down a lot even once we have a generic option.
In our last few moments together, Dr. Davis, is this an exciting time to be in the field you're in medicine? Is it changing?
Absolutely. I think, you know, we continue to learn more and more about how obesity works, how these metabolic pathways work. And I think there's a lot of new directions that things can go in. And it's really just exciting that we now do have medical options to offer patients that are effective and safe, and we can use them to really help people on that journey to try to improve their health and manage their obesity.
Dr. Davis, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Dr. Don Belt-Davis is a UW Health endocrinologist and professor of medicine in the Division of Endocrinology, Diabetes, and Metabolism at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As a new generation of obesity medications emerges, we learn about injections to help people who are struggling with diabetes and chronic weight issues. You can be part of this discussion on weight loss drugs and health. Call in with a question. Share comments at any point, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Don Belt-Davis is a UW Health endocrinologist and professor of medicine in the Division of Endocrinology, Diabetes, and Metabolism at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Davis, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
There is the stigma about obesity, and I think we should talk about it first. How much do physicians understand what causes obesity?
Well, I think, you know, we understand that there are many, many factors that go into the cause of obesity. But I think maybe the most important message to send is that it's not necessarily something that's always personal responsibility, which I think is a common misconception of the public that, you know, everyone with obesity is, you know, has personal responsibility. In other words, they made poor choices. What we know about obesity biologically is that it can be People can be predisposed to obesity based on events in their early life, even things that happened in utero before they were even born, exposures to various environmental impacts, as well as, you know, societal infrastructure, which makes it difficult for a lot of people to have access to healthy food and activity.
How does obesity then become life-threatening?
Well, obesity is, in and of itself, is may seem to be mostly a cosmetic issue, but in reality, individuals with obesity have a lot of underlying metabolic changes and are also have a lot of inflammatory processes going on in their body. And so we know that many people with obesity are at greatly increased risk of other diseases like diabetes, cardiovascular disease or heart attacks, strokes, and even certain types of cancers as well.
Our state's health agency says about 2 in every 3 adults in the state are affected by excess weight. The CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, reports the national obesity rate has increased about 10 percentage points over the past 2 decades. Why is obesity becoming more common in this country?
Well, that's a really great question. Again, I think we have a lot of potential answers, but I'm not sure that there's just one easy answer to that question. You know, we think that increasing rates of obesity have a lot to do with, again, as I was mentioning, some societal changes that have happened. You know, people have more access to kind of low nutritional quality but high calorie foods. There's probably less access to activity in people's general day. People spend a lot more of their working day nowadays sitting in front of a computer rather than doing any sort of physical work. So a lot of factors have really gone into this. As I mentioned, a lot of these are societal more than individual factors. And it's a huge problem, as you mentioned. You know, this overweight and obesity affects almost 2/3 of our population. So I think as we talk about the impact that will have in the future on our overall health, but also kind of our societal impact on the cost of medical care in this world, in the country in particular, it's really going to be something that we're really struggling with. So, you know, we kind of refer to obesity as, you know, a really important public health issue that is going to have a huge impact across the next several decades.
Dr. Don Belt-Davis with us, UW Health endocrinologist and UW-Madison professor of medicine, as we explore new treatments for obesity. You can join in with your questions and comments at any point, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Davis, how are the treatment options for obesity changing?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of kind of new and interest, I guess, in obesity treatment and a lot of, I guess, media attention and sort of public awareness of some newer medication therapies for obesity. I'm sure we'll get into the details on those. But we have had, you know, various treatments for obesity for, you know, many years. We have used medications for the treatment of obesity, and we've also used bariatric surgery, which can be a very effective way to treat obesity as well. But this newer class of medications that we'll most likely talk about today are injectables. These include a medication called semaglutide, which is marketed as Ozempic for the treatment of diabetes, and then is marketed as Wegovy for the treatment of obesity. And then there are other drugs in that same class that are also works in a similar way. And I think these have received a lot of attention because they're a bit newer. They are more effective than some of the older medications we had for obesity management. And they've just been popular on social media and other things that has really gained them a lot of attention.
Physicians as well, scientists calling it, you know, game changers, a transformational time in the conversation around Ozempic and Wegovy. How miraculous are these drugs?
Well, I think I would not call them miraculous. I think that, you know, is a bit of an overstatement. And I think that's a little bit where a lot of the public misconception can sometimes come in. So these medications in the treatment of obesity specifically, not in patients who also have diabetes, but specifically for the treatment of obesity, these medications can they can promote a meaningful amount of weight loss. And by meaningful, I'm kind of focusing on clinically meaningful. So on average, you know, patients might lose somewhere in the range of, 10 to 30 pounds of weight on these medications, which is good. And that often can lead to significant improvement in their overall metabolic health, maybe lower their risk of diabetes or improve their diabetes. But it also isn't a miracle drug. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is not the medication that's going to allow someone to lose 100 pounds, 150 pounds, and completely kind of transform their life. But it can be a very helpful tool. So I think it's just important to kind of understand the capacity. There's also variable responses. Some people seem to respond very well to these medications and maybe lose more than 30 pounds, but others don't have a really strong response and maybe they only lose a smaller amount of weight.
Okay, so we got the clinical meaningful weight loss there, but what is the pharmacological aspect of this? How do these drugs work in the body?
Sure. So the drugs we're talking about here, which again, the one that most people have heard of is semaglutide, which is known as Ozempic or Wegovy, but there are drugs in this class, including something called Victoza, Trulicity, Saxenda. These are all in the same class. And what they do is they are essentially designed to mimic a hormone that our body makes normally. This hormone is called GLP-1. And GLP-1 is a hormone that we normally make every time we eat. It's secreted from endocrine cells in the gut in response to food. And it sort of signals to your body, hey, I just ate something. Get ready to process all these nutrients coming in and get ready to stop eating because you just ate and you don't need to eat anymore. So it sends signals to the brain that you're to help you feel full and to reduce appetite. It sends signals to the nerves that control the stomach to kind of delay the emptying of the stomach and help you feel full a little bit longer. And it also sends signals to parts of the body that help you process those nutrients, like the beta cells in the pancreas that secrete insulin and helps you secrete more insulin and move that blood sugar down. And that's why it also works for diabetes as well.
And
go ahead.
And these are working through injections. Is that right?
Correct. Because it's a hormone, a peptide hormone, it's not something that can be taken orally in general. However, there is an oral version of semaglutide available now. The brand name there is Rybelsus. That's been around for a few years now. I think it was approved in about 2019. And that does work through the same pathways, and it can be taken as a pill.
Dr. Don Belt Davis, endocrinologist, directs the UW-Madison Comprehensive Diabetes Center as we explore the changing treatment landscape for weight loss drugs. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore how obesity treatments could change with medications that are associated with diabetes management and ones that are currently being investigated as potential anti-obesity drugs. You can join in the conversation about achieving and maintaining weight loss. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Don Belt Davis is a UW health endocrinologist, directs the UW-Madison Comprehensive Diabetes Center. Let's take a call now. Lori is joining us from Milwaukee. Lori, hi, go ahead. What is your story?
Hi, good morning. I pretty much have been an advocate for these weight loss drugs by experience. I'm above 60, tried for about 2 years, everything, intermittent fasting, smoothies, you name it. I tried for 2 years, so I'm postmenopausal, and I just kept chunking on the weight, 2 to 4 pounds a month at some points. So I finally convinced my doctor, and went through all the paces, went on Ozempic, had a fine experience, titrated correctly per my doctor. She's awesome. Then insurance switched me to Wegovy. That went well. Then I stopped working and didn't have insurance, so then I flew solo. Now I'm going to ask for another alternative that I can afford. I just want to be an advocate for people who would like to try it, because we're hearing so many terrible things, and I got such attitude from relatives, coworkers, everyone, when it was so politically incorrect to use it. It truly saved my body and my brain. I now swim, I walk, I can move better, I can exercise what I need to exercise. Knees and hips are improved, but not amazing. So I'm calling to encourage people to check with their doctor, go through the paces, don't hear the 1% terrible, and then ask you, what's the next most affordable step you could consider for my continued weight management?
Lori, thank you so much for sharing your story. Dr. Davis.
Hi, yeah, thank you so much for calling in, Lori. And I think, you know, your experience is what we hear quite commonly. Like I was saying earlier, these drugs can be quite effective at helping patients, you know, lose weight when they've, you know, struggled and failed. And a lot of the older medications and therapies we had for weight loss just were not as effective. But you bring up a really good point, which is that, unfortunately, what we suspect and what we know probably is that these medications, once you discontinue them, then often people likely will regain weight off of these medications. And they are also very expensive, as you point out. And some patients don't have insurance coverage options for these. Even if they have insurance, some companies don't cover these medications for obesity. And if you lose insurance, obviously, then it can be completely unaffordable. So, you know, to kind of get at your question of what next. So when these medications are not available for whatever reason, cost, or there's also been a lot of supply chain issues and drug shortages with these medications, what do we do? And really, we don't have good answers there. I think there are not necessarily any other, you know, affordable ways to get these medications. There have been reports of a lot of people obtaining semaglutide from compounding pharmacies, for example, which I do not recommend. Those are not FDA regulated and are not, in fact, as far as I know, they're not legal. They're not allowed to make that medication off patent. So I would discourage people from doing that, buying a kind of compounded version of this that's not the formally approved version.
Do the drug companies themselves have particular programs for people who do not have coverage, like some type of application program that could help with assistance?
Sometimes they do, but for the most part, the answer is no there. For the vast majority of patients, they may be able to get a month or two supply, for example, like from a co-payment card or something like that, but eventually that will run out. Like there's no way to continue on these drugs somewhat indefinitely without being able to cover them with insurance or payment.
Laura in Green Bay called saying that they are diabetic, was prescribed Ozempic, worked well, Laura says, but now can't find the drug for diabetes, but their friend can buy it for weight loss. And Laura's wondering if they would have better luck getting it for weight loss as well.
Yeah, so this is exactly kind of what I was getting at. There's been a lot of shortages and a lot of supply chain issues. So, you know, these drugs have really exploded in popularity over the last, you know, couple years. And, you know, unfortunately, the companies just haven't been able to keep up with the demand. And so, this is happening to a lot of my patients as well with diabetes, that they are not able to get some of these medications. Sometimes there's an option to switch to one of the other medications in the same class. For example, Ozempic might be unavailable, but Trulicity might be available, or one of the other options. And so that's an important thing to ask your doctor and your pharmacist about. The weight loss version of semaglutide, which is Wegovy, all also sometimes has been available when the diabetes version, Ozempic, is not. And so that's another way some patients have been able to obtain supply is by getting it under the weight loss branded application. But again, it gets tricky with insurance because insurance companies may not cover it for obesity therapy, but only cover it for diabetes, for example. So it can be very hard. And it's a lot of paperwork and phone calls and tracking down supply for patients and for the providers who are trying to prescribe these medications.
Dr. Don Bell Davis directs the UW-Madison Comprehensive Diabetes Center. We're at the intersection of diabetes and weight loss and new medications coming to market. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Dr. Davis, are there some common side effects with Ozempic or Wegovy?
Yeah, the most common side effect, which is quite common, happens probably to 30 to 40% of patients taking these medications, is nausea. And that happens most commonly right at the onset of treatment. It often gets better, but not for everyone. And then some patients also along with that will have more severe GI upset like vomiting, diarrhea, even constipation. And that's really the major side effect. There has been some talk about these more rare side effects, things like trouble with emptying of the stomach causing problems or other kind of rare side effects. And I think as the previous caller mentioned, those are uncommon and rare. And so that's not the major thing. What we really worry about is just patients not being able to tolerate these medications because they have so much nausea.
In recent decades, though, some weight loss drugs have turned out to be dangerous. Drugs with amphetamines were addictive, others damaged heart valves. Are there reasons to be wary of the new weight loss drugs coming to market?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And you're right. Some of the older drugs were based off of amphetamines and some of the still approved drugs that we have for weight loss outside of this class can still have some side effects. They're much safer than the older versions. I think, it's a great question and time will tell to some regard in terms of whether there's any longer term side effects, but these drugs aren't that new. We've had drugs in this class dating back for over 15 years now. So we've been using them for a long time for diabetes therapy. And they've been studied in very large clinical trials for many years. And we haven't seen a lot of short-term, side effects. But long-term effects, there's some concern about potentially increasing the risk of things like pancreatic cancer, increasing the risk of pancreatitis, which is an inflammation of the pancreas, and potentially some other things. But for the most part, we don't have any strong evidence to support that in the trials that have been done so far. And again, we'll have to just follow patients on these medications for longer periods of time to ensure there's no real signal there.
Longer periods of time, about how long would a patient stay on Ozempic or Wegovy for treatment of obesity?
Right. So that's really kind of coming back to our first caller's issue. The right answer to that is essentially as long as they want to maintain that weight loss. So, which could be forever, right? Mm. So we're talking about a medication that a patient would potentially need to continue taking somewhat indefinitely. And as long as they want to maintain that weight loss, weight regain can certainly happen with discontinuation of these medications. And so this isn't something that we recommend using for short-term use to help lose a little bit of weight and then just go ahead and stop it. Now, again, there's variability. Some people are able to make lifestyle changes and other modifications and they can maintain the weight loss.
And we have to pause right there. UW Health endocrinologist Don Bell Davis, our guide. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Newly approved weight loss medications are aimed at people struggling with obesity. We learn how this newer class of drugs used to treat diabetes is gaining attention for impressive weight loss results. call in with a question. You can share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Don Belt Davis is a UW Health endocrinologist and professor of medicine in the Division of Endocrinology, Diabetes, and Metabolism at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Davis, we heard from Val in Bayview, called in wondering to what degree these weight loss medications act as placebos. Do they initially motivate a person to lose weight through diet and exercise? And if so, do the drugs become less necessary so the dosages could be reduced and eventually eliminated over time? Dr. Davis, are you there?
Oh, I apologize.
That's
okay. Mute myself.
Sure.
That's a great question. There certainly are some placebo effects that we see in, weight loss clinical trials. However, these drugs were all studied compared to a placebo group. So in other words, we know that they promote more weight loss even than what the small amount we would see from that placebo effect. And the placebo effect is essentially just, a patient kind of paying more attention and being aware of their, their weight as part of a trial and maybe losing a little bit of weight on their own. The answer is yes. There are some patients who probably are able to use this opportunity to lose some weight with medication, change their lifestyle, be more active now because they've lost that weight and they're feeling better and they're healthier. And they can perhaps maintain that weight loss off of medication. But when we kind of look at averages across the board, that's not going to likely be the case. The case is most likely patients will have rebound weight gain. And that happens with almost every weight loss medication we have, that patients unfortunately tend to have rebound weight gain. The body sort of has this tricky way of resetting itself, and it unfortunately likes to kind of bring its weight back up to where it was. So it will actually change metabolism and things when you lose weight, and can sort of promote that weight regain in ways that are not so beneficial for the management of obesity.
If a person is prescribed one of the new weight loss therapies, are other therapies or nutritional guidance recommended alongside them?
Yeah, we always recommend, working on what we generically refer to as lifestyle modification, trying to follow a overall lower calorie diet and, get more activity in your day. Those are two things that we know can help promote both not so much weight loss, but also just overall health. So we do recommend those. But in terms of following a very specific diet, people talk about intermittent fasting and ketogenic diets and all those things. Those can be effective for weight loss, but we don't necessarily recommend those for patients taking these medications at the same time. But there's nothing wrong with continuing on a diet plan while you use these medications.
Heard from Samantha in Whitehall, who called in to say they're 42 years old, they're 5 feet tall, 180 pounds, and Samantha wants to know what they can do to eliminate the food cravings when they're not actually hungry.
Right. So, appetite suppression is one of the mechanisms that these drugs that we're talking about work through, but there are other medications, as I mentioned, as well. We use medications called phentermine and topiramate that can work pretty well as appetite suppressants and can also help promote weight loss in that way. And those can sometimes be a little more affordable than these newer injectable medications, but they also can have some other side effects as well. So suppressing appetite for some people is really critical to help them with that weight loss journey.
And it may be hard to understand or relate to what it's like not to feel full, not to recognize when the body doesn't need more nutrients. How can you describe that complication for someone who can't relate?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, sort of the things that drive people to eat are complicated. Mm-hmm. you know, for some patients, it's a very strong hunger feeling that they can have, which is disproportionate to the actual reality of when they've last eaten. And that is all regulated in the brain. Their brain secretes different hormones and, you know, neural outputs that make you feel hungry. And that can be very dysregulated in the setting of obesity. But on the other side, some people also have, you know, dysregulated eating for other reasons. They may not necessarily feel hungry, but it's a way that they manage stress, the way that they kind of cope with difficult times during their day. It may be a way that they manage anxiety. And so it can be complicated in that way. And then there's also a lot of disordered eating, things like binge eating and other eating disorders that can play into all these challenges that patients have with weight gain and weight loss.
We're talking about advancements in weight loss treatments. Dr. Don Belt Davis, UW Health endocrinologist and UW Madison professor of medicine. You can join in questions and comments at any point, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Marty in Lake Geneva with a question. Hi, Marty.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I heard that these diabetic drugs have been around for 15 years. I'm going to show my ignorance here. People that have diabetes, do they have to take these drugs for the rest of their life? Much like, you know, people who want to keep the weight off? And I'll listen to the response off air.
Marty, thank you so much. Dr. Davis.
Yeah, that's a great question. And the answer is basically yes. I mean, we have a lot of different medication options for the management of type 2 diabetes. So, you know, using a medication in this class is just one of the options. A patient may continue with a medication in this class, or for whatever reason, they may switch to a different medication. But yes, diabetes is a chronic disease. And so when a patient's diagnosed, they're going to need to continue to stay on some medical therapy for their diabetes typically. If they are able to lose a significant amount of weight, though, that's what we were getting at earlier, like metabolically significant weight loss. Some patients early in their diagnosis of diabetes are potentially able to, quote unquote, reverse their diabetes through significant weight loss, which could include using one of these medications. So it's possible, but again, then if they regain weight, they have to closely monitor for that return of their diabetes.
At what point should someone consider bariatric surgery?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up because I think bariatric surgery also remains a really important component of our strategy for managing both diabetes and obesity, actually. Bariatric surgery can be highly effective at weight loss, and it promotes sustained weight loss. So this is an example where you can have the surgery and then the weight loss continues even beyond the surgery without ongoing treatment. Bariatric surgery is very helpful for diabetes. It can actually even reverse diabetes in some cases. So what bariatric surgery is recommended for people who have significant obesity, we typically would say a BMI at least greater than 35 and often with at least one other obesity-related disease like diabetes, hypertension, and again, it can be very effective, but it needs to be done in the right patient, and it is, you know, obviously a more invasive thing, although they have more and more advances in bariatric surgery also to make that a less invasive surgery with less long-term complications and side effects as well.
Can you walk us through what happens in bariatric surgery?
Sure. So, there's a few different forms of bariatric surgery. Currently, one of the most commonly performed ones now is called the sleeve gastrectomy, which is basically removing about 2/3 of the stomach. And by reducing the amount of volume, basically, for the stomach, there are some effects on just the patient feeling full more quickly. But interestingly, bariatric surgery seems to have a lot more effects than just the basic, you know, how much food can you eat at once? And it changes lots of different pathways in the body. It changes the hormones that are secreted after you eat. It changes the way that the gut processes food. And all of those changes are really critical for why bariatric surgery works. One of the hormones it changes is actually GLP-1, which is the hormone that these medications are designed to mimic. So basically these medications are mimicking one of the pathways that is effective for bariatric surgery.
So it has a more wider effective effect on the body's systems and how it mm-hmm. processes nutrients.
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How effective is bariatric surgery in helping maintain a healthy weight? What has the research shown over the decades?
Yeah, so bariatric surgery can be quite effective in terms of weight loss overall. This is an example where patients actually can occasionally lose up to 100 pounds or more with bariatric surgery. And what we also know is that weight loss, as I mentioned earlier, is sustained. So there's been studies looking at patients who've had bariatric surgery 10, 15 years ago and their weight loss. Although they may regain a little bit of weight, they still maintain a weight that is significantly below their baseline before surgery. So it's both more effective, I would say, than the current medications we have. And it's also sustainable over the long term, which is very different than what we think is going to be the case. Now, we don't have 10 to 15 year data on patients who've lost weight with these drugs and then stopped them, but we predict that that most likely is not going to be as favorable.
And you said that the surgery is less invasive now. In what way? What have the advancements been like?
So the current one I just mentioned, sleeve gastrectomy, is removing part of the stomach, and that can be done laparoscopically. And previously, the more common one was called Roux-en-Y gastric bypass surgery, which involved more changes. The parts of the small intestine were removed and rerouted, and there was a little bit higher complication rate with that, and it was a little more invasive. And some of the older versions of bariatric surgery were even more invasive and more prone to malabsorption and other chronic nutritional problems as well. So there have been a lot of advances, and there's even some newer procedures that are under investigation now that are even less invasive, mm-hmm. potentially than just going in endoscopically, like to put in things through the mouth into the GI tract.
Dr. Don Belt-Davis, UW Health Endocrinologist, Director of the UW-Madison Comprehensive Diabetes Center, as we explore new weight loss therapies. Be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss an emerging class of medications that could help with weight loss in people who live with obesity and potentially treat other medical issues. UW Health endocrinologist Don Belt-Davis takes your questions about prescription injections associated with weight loss and diabetes management. Call in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Davis, physicians and researchers have found that drugs like Ozempic might also be useful in treating addictions like compulsive shopping, smoking, and alcoholism. What potential do you see for these drugs to be used in treating other addictions?
Yeah, there's some interesting research coming out in that space, and there's also been some ongoing work looking at the potential role of these medications in other disorders associated with the brain. So I think, it's a little early to say, but I agree there is some interesting early data. Importantly, I would say these drugs are not FDA approved for that use, and there hasn't been enough studies to formally kind of definitively say that it's going to be effective there. But I think it's something that we will definitely be watching over time, and there may be an even more expanded use of these medications. The one thing that we didn't really bring up is that these medications also do have other benefits in terms of reducing cardiovascular risk and also some improvements in overall kidney function for our patients with diabetes. So those potential benefits, again, may be there for the patient using this simply for obesity management as well.
Donna in Madison called in wondering why it is that when you reduce the amount of food you eat, your weight loss can stagnate and you don't lose the weight.
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, it is the reality. And I think this is why it can be really frustrating to try to lose weight. And it's also really frustrating, I think, to convey to certain people that, you know, it's not all about just willpower. As I mentioned earlier, you know, what we know happens with obesity is that there's kind of a reset and rewiring of a lot of the metabolic pathways in the body that really make it hard to lose weight. And when you do lose weight, if you reduce calorie intake, sometimes what the body does is it starts saying, oh my gosh, I'm not getting enough calories. So now I'm going to reset everything and I'm going to hold on to those calories even more.
Conserve. Yeah.
Exactly. And so it just sort of creates this vicious cycle where it's really, really challenging to, you know, lose weight. And that's really what I'm getting at. Like, obesity is really, it's a disease process and it's a change in the way your body's responding to nutrients and your environment. And it really makes it difficult. It's not just a matter of like willpower to combat this problem.
And, you know, patients might say, look, I've tried everything that I can do to achieve a healthy lifestyle and reach that ideal healthy weight, and just nothing is working for me. I'm wondering how those conversations go as that patient has that situation where they have tried, you know, willpower and other things in their life to be able to take off the weight. What are your responses like?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's important to you know, reassure and validate people in that who are having those experiences, because as I mentioned, you know, and I think people have a lot of, you know, shame and blame and guilt and other feelings associated with obesity and weight loss. And it can be really challenging to kind of work through all of that and, you know, help them have a healthier lifestyle. I think, you know, as a society too, we often equate body weight with lots of things. And, you know, it's important to remember that for some people, maybe losing weight isn't as important as they might think. You know, if patients are only 10 to 15 pounds overweight and otherwise healthy and don't have any, you know, metabolic consequences of that extra weight, then, you know, maybe the better thing for them for their mental health is to essentially stay where they are. And I think we have this, you know, societal push that everyone needs to be at sort of this perfect body weight, which is really not possible and not sustainable for a lot of people.
There has been buildup, and I hate to use the word hype, but maybe it is that word, about these new emerging weight loss medications. Is there a strategy you use when talking with patients about, you know, what is practical and what is, you know, realistic for weight loss management, especially patients who have been reading up on these new medications and seem really eager to try?
Right. And I think, you know, again, it for me as a physician, what I'm really looking at is, you know, what are the overall health consequences of this excess weight? If a patient is having a lot of, you know, implications on their health related to the excess weight, they have early prediabetes, they have high blood pressure, they're having a lot of arthritis due to that excess weight. Those things, I think, are things that drive me to say, okay, there's a really strong medical need for us to help you with promoting weight loss, and I think we should move forward with this. But I think it's important to just remind everyone that, you know, there are always side effects with every medication we use. There's cost both to the individual and to society with every medication we use. And so I think we do have to think about this in terms of which patients are going to get the most benefit and make sure that it's kind of being used for patients with the most need, essentially, so that we aren't kind of bankrupting the system, I guess, by putting 66% of the population on these very expensive medications.
What other weight loss drugs are being developed that could be effective for treating obesity? What could be coming down the pipeline?
Yeah, so there's a new medication that was approved about a year ago for diabetes. The brand name there is Mounjaro. It's also, the generic is tirzepatide. And there's pretty positive data on that medication for weight loss as well, and we expect it will be approved for weight loss alone in the very near future. And that drug seems to be even more powerful and potent than the ones we're talking about now. It works by targeting not just GLP-1, but also mimics another gut hormone called GIP, and targets both of those receptors. And so it's kind of even has like double potency. And so we're kind of excited about that one. That's the one that some people are referring to as kind of game changing, because the weight loss we get there at the maximum doses is getting close to what we can achieve with bariatric surgery.
Generics in this industry, in this area, or is there any generic medicine?
So at this point, there is not. And as I mentioned, there are some compounding pharmacies selling these medications, which is not essentially legal. Mm-hmm. And even if some of these medications will be coming off patent, or maybe already are off patent, but unfortunately, even with generics, sometimes that doesn't necessarily reduce the overall price, because pricing is a complicated thing and it's tied to demand and all these other things. So the pricing may not come down a lot even once we have a generic option.
In our last few moments together, Dr. Davis, is this an exciting time to be in the field you're in medicine? Is it changing?
Absolutely. I think, you know, we continue to learn more and more about how obesity works, how these metabolic pathways work. And I think there's a lot of new directions that things can go in. And it's really just exciting that we now do have medical options to offer patients that are effective and safe, and we can use them to really help people on that journey to try to improve their health and manage their obesity.
Dr. Davis, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
Dr. Don Belt-Davis is a UW Health endocrinologist and professor of medicine in the Division of Endocrinology, Diabetes, and Metabolism at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.